Welcome to the markets, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline Chicago, Friday, June 15th. Halfway through the month, and it's that weekly visit. Max Armstrong and yours truly, Orion Samuelson, taking a look at market activities. What is becoming more and more an eventful market activity week from Wall Street to the agricultural fields of the U.S. and South America. But Max and I will cover that story, and Max is going to be talking to Dale Dirkholz, the market analyst with AgriVisor, about maybe missed opportunities. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But let's take a look at the last trading day of the week on Wall Street, where the stock market ended lower, capping a day of heavy trading, but investors mostly pulling back from the initial concerns over that trade dispute between the United States and China. The Dow Industrial traded as much as 220 points lower for the day, but the market came back to the Dow losing 84 points and ending the day at 25,090. The S&P 500 lost 3 points, ending the day and the week at 2779. And the NASDAQ Composite dropped 14 points to end the week at 7746. And for the week, the Dow down 0.9%. The S&P 500 up 0.01%, and the NASDAQ gained 1.33%, its fourth consecutive weekly advance. Of the 11 major sectors of the S&P 500, 6 ended the day in negative territory. And there was a lot going on with the trade war, not wanting to go away, or at least talk of the trade war. A trade war not wanting to go away, and so the market continues to look at trade concessions and tariffs and wars, but what really is happening? Well, it's a daily guess. Today, much concern over the trade war, but by the end of the day, it had slowed down quite a bit. So, let's move on, because we do have an interesting meeting coming up next week. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies will meet in Vienna on Friday and Saturday of next week to review their production agreement. President Donald Trump has again been blaming the group for rising oil prices, and they are up almost 60% over the last year. So the political pressure is on to pump more oil. Most oil watchers do expect an increase, however, before the end of the year. Other events next week. On Wednesday, home sales data for May forecast to show a 1.5% increase compared to a 2.5% fall in the previous month. Tuesday, reports on housing starts and building permits for May. Building permits forecast to show a decline to 1,350,000 units. Then, of course, on Thursday, we get the initial claims for state unemployment benefits for the week ended June 16th. Analysts expect that number to increase to 221,000. On Wednesday, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell gives a presentation on monetary policy at a time of uncertainty and tight labor markets. That will take place at the ECB, European Central Bank Forum on Central Banking in Portugal. On Tuesday, ECB President Mario Draghi, Chief Economist Peter Preher, and Central Bank of Ireland Chief Philip Lane will appear at the forum. Thursday, the Bank of England expected to keep interest rates on hold, but the focus will be on indications for its following meeting in August, when markets put the chance of an interest hike at about 50%. Carl Icahn's proxy battle for control of SandRidge Energy will be decided by shareholders on Tuesday. Icahn, who scuttled the company's purchase of a shale oil rival, has nominated a 7-person slate of directors, arguing the current board is ill-equipped to manage its evaluation of strategic alternatives for the company. On Thursday, Kroger Company, the owner of Ralph's and Fred Meyer's supermarkets, expected to report a rise in first quarter revenue and growth in comparable store sales at its home delivery, curbside pickup, and self-checkout services attract more shoppers. Investors will keep an eye on the company's gross margin as it increases investments to draw more customers in a very price-sensitive retail food market. Canadian inflation and retail sales data expected on Friday. On Wednesday, Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland will give a speech on Canada in a changing world amid worsening relations with the United States, as President Trump has imposed steel and aluminum tariffs on Mexico and Canada at a time when the three nations are trying to renegotiate the NAFTA trade agreement. Wells Fargo Chief Executive Officer Tim Sloan will discuss the bank's growth and progress in rebounding from the sales scandal that culminated in 2016. That will take place at a conference hosted by Bloomberg. On Tuesday, Ford Motor Chairman Bill Ford and CEO Jim Hackett plan to unveil details of a significant investment by the automaker in a downtown Detroit redevelopment project to house the automaker's advanced vehicle programs. And then on Monday, the retiring Federal Reserve Bank of New York President William Dudley will give opening remarks before the Reforming Culture and Behavior in the Financial Services Industry. So a lot going on, and it's been interesting to watch the increased activity of the governors of the Federal Reserve. Of course, Federal Reserve this week met and agreed to increase interest rates by another 0.25%, and then follow that with 2 interest rate advances before the end of the year. Oil prices fell more than $2 a barrel Friday after 2 of the world's biggest producers indicated they might increase output at next week's OPEC meeting, while U.S. exports were threatened by potential Chinese tariffs on crude oil and retiring refined products. Oil investors have been nervous ahead of the coming OPEC summit in Vienna next week. For the day, Brent crude fell $2.50 a barrel and settled the week at $73.44. But U.S. crude settled down $1.83 for the day at $65.06 a barrel. And Brent crude on track to end the week down more than 4%. Well, U.S. crude was heading for a decline of 1.7%. So a closer look at the China-U.S. trade situation. China will impose additional 25% tariffs on 659 U.S. goods worth $50 billion. That's in response to the U.S. announcement that it will levy tariffs on Chinese imports. Tariffs on $34 billion of U.S. goods, including agricultural products such as soybeans, will take effect on July 6th. Soybeans, of course, are China's biggest import from the United States by value, but the tariffs also will be applied to autos and aquatic products, according to the ministry. The list of 659 U.S. goods was longer than a preliminary list of 106 goods published by the Commerce Ministry in China in April, although the value of products affected remained unchanged at about $250 billion. Meanwhile, here at home, with that Federal Reserve decision following its meeting this past week, consumer prices rose marginally in May because of a slowdown in the increase in the cost of gasoline, and the underlying trend continued to suggest moderate inflation in the economy. The Labor Department's inflation report was published ahead of the start of the Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting on Tuesday. Steadily rising inflation and a tightening labor market expected to encourage the U.S. Central Bank to raise interest rates for a second time this year. So that was a long, well, really a 9-year delay in making much of an increase in interest rates in the United States. The interesting business activity this past week, of course, dealt with the merger being approved of the AT&T merger. And that was approved over the Trump administration's attempt to block the merger with Time Warner. But it took place. And so now, is this the beginning of a lot of other merger activity? Well, apparently it is going to encourage it, because Comcast Corporation offered $65 billion on Wednesday to 21st Century Fox for the media assets, and of course that came about because of the encouragement of the AT&T Time Warner merger. More to come, including a look at agricultural commodity prices with Dale Dirkholz of AgriVisor sitting down to talk to Max in our studio, and we'll hear it after this from the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Time to talk agricultural commodities, and certainly they have been impacted by the tariff and the trade retaliation talk that we have undergone in all of the markets this past week. But Max had the opportunity to sit down with Dale Dirkholz, analyst with AgriVisor. And Max, I understand you talked to him about what missed opportunities?
Well, we missed the opportunity. We look back over the past few days, watch those charts. We look at where we were and now where we are. And I think a lot of farmers are wondering, will I get another chance?
I don't think the game's totally over. But, you know, as we're recording this, we're really right ahead of announcements to come out of Washington, whether we get tariffs put on Chinese goods or not. And that's been part of the mix here in the market this week after the USDA crop report was out, just this wholesale fear about trade.
But there was also a significant rain, too much in some spots. That rain event last weekend, Saturday through Monday, I mean, it dumped right on the I-74 corridor. Again, too much in some spots, but
That was a factor, wasn't it? You would rather have water than not have water. And, yeah, it was a big play coming into the beginning of the week because we had really good widespread rains back over the weekend that caught a lot of the drier areas, whether you're in Iowa or Illinois. Yeah, some missed. You know, Missouri didn't get much out of it, some parts in southern Iowa or western Illinois. But still, big areas got rain and laid it down at a point in time where they were really starting to need rain because some of these places hadn't had good moisture in maybe 8 weeks.
Yeah, it was a critical rain. It was certainly needed, as you point out.
Oh, not without a doubt.
And there are some analysts saying, hey, the train has left the station here.
Yeah, maybe it has, maybe it has. And as far as the crop is concerned, you know, that we don't know. Because a lot of people tend to forget, you know, years when I can go back in like 1974, 1980, 1983. The one we had in, I think it was 2003, where we had really some late season issues with a little dryness and a little heat. The ones back in the 80s, pretty severe. So, you know, there's still a story to be told, a tale to be told on how good the crops might be. Certainly we aren't going to have an 88 or a 2012 type crop, no doubt about that. But where we're at now, corn in particular, even if we go back to something like average, let's say 170 bushel crop, you potentially tighten those carryout up numbers pretty severely and really argue prices ought to be higher.
When that supply demand report came out, you weren't so bearish on it?
No, the S&D numbers that we had really were kind of muted. A lot of people going into the report from the USDA were fearful that the USDA might try to massage in some impact from trade issues themselves. And because there's still so much unknown on that front, the USDA just did a big punt and said, we're ignoring it. And for their purpose, yeah, I think I would have too, because where you're coming up to the critical point here, it can swing either way on you. So they just chose to stand back. So the S&Ds, when you look at the numbers, they were good fundamentally, but we have other issues here now that we have to deal with that really can impact those and how they turn out in the end.
Quite often when we see these reports in the summertime, the swing is back to watching weather again, isn't it?
Well, it is, you know, and I think here, you know, this weekend we're going to have news about where we're at or where we stand as far as trade regarding China itself at this point. You know, once that comes to the background a little bit and we have some stability or insight into maybe where we're going with that, then we are going to turn around and look back to weather. But even weather, I see some things that tell me we've got a lot of uncertainty ahead. There's some talk we could even have maybe a mild El Nino coming by the very end of summer. So we'll have to see how it shakes out.
Back to that supply-demand report for just a moment. The wheat wasn't terribly unfriendly, was it, in terms of supplies?
Well, it really wasn't. You know, everybody was pretty comfortable with that. You know, the one thing that hasn't been done at the USDA level yet, they're going to change their world wheat S&D numbers here, and they're going to have another line right up at the top, and it's going to input world wheat excluding China. And the one thing we have to understand in those world wheat numbers, China actually holds over half the inventory of wheat in the world. And if you look at the world wheat structure outside of China, we've been steadily tightening the last 3 years, and it wouldn't take too much to start getting what I'll call not dangerously, but moderately tight.
Isn't that part of the contention of the Trump administration on this trade issue with China, that the Chinese hold so much of the world's surplus in their storehouses, whether it's wheat or some other crop?
Yeah, you know, that has been an impediment in the trade, you know, and the Chinese even, you know, they're trying to figure out how to work out of it. You know, first they took on cotton. They worked those stocks down. Guess what? They're back being buyers of cotton around the world today because they're starting to see demand come in. Corn, they're working those gradually down. Wheat and rice are the two they really haven't chosen to tackle yet. And I think once they get the corn done, then they'll turn around and try to figure out how they try to tackle this surplus of wheat they have, whatever quality, whatever size it is, which we really don't know.
What do you tell your farmer clients when a producer asks you, Dale, what should I be doing here? And many of these folks are driving down the same roads we are, looking at those crops. They're looking out their kitchen or farm office window and seeing crops that look better now than they have in a couple of years at this stage of the game. They see the direction the market has taken in recent days, moving down significantly from those peaks that were posted last month. What does the producer do now?
Right at the moment, this is what I call bloody tongue time. And by that, I mean bite your tongue so you don't do something stupid. You know, the markets got hit real hard here over the last few weeks, last couple of months in terms of beans. don't really get caught up in this bearishness at this point, the emotion, because we've brought markets back down into reasonable price levels here. You know, we're at 360 on nearby corn futures beans. We're homing in on the $9 mark. And no matter how the Chinese trade thing shakes out, you know, we don't have the fundamental structure around the world to really justify markets going a lot lower than where we are now, nor for any significant period of time. So at least, and at a minimum, I think somewhere along the way, we'll have some weather issues come back into the fray again, and we'll see some opportunity to sell stuff at a higher price, a better price than today.
The emotion of these days of summer can be tough, can't it?
It swings an awful lot. There's no doubt about it. Years ago, we did a study, which is kind of interesting. I haven't updated it for a few years, but we found that there tends to be short-term changes in directions around the spring and summer holidays. We peaked out around Memorial Day. 4th of July is not far away. We going to bottom out right ahead of that? Maybe so.
I watch my Jack Russell Terriers as I play ball with them. They keep their eyes on the ball. That's why they are so good at it. You really have to do that as a marketer in agriculture, don't you?
You really do. You gotta look at the markets all the time, or at least, you know, on a frequent basis. Doesn't mean you need to do it every day, but you also have to have this resolve to try to keep from getting emotional about it. And that's really the hardest thing anybody has to accomplish. And it doesn't matter if you're a farmer marketing or a trader just trading the market. You got to keep your emotions under control, because that's when you make a lot of mistakes.
Well, thanks to Max and Dale Durkles. And I guess there is no question that when the emotion gets into the system, you do tend to make more mistakes. We'll cover more of agricultural commodities when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
There was a very interesting headline on Reuters about midday Friday. And the headline said, and I quote the Reuters headline, "As U.S. and Canada spar, farm hopes ride on two men in a lobster boat." So what's the story? Well, let me quote the story from Reuters. Friday, while Justin Trudeau vowed last week not to be pushed around and President Donald Trump called the Canadian Prime Minister weak, two key officials in their governments with a seemingly harmonious relationship were making fishing plans. Today, Friday, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue visited the farm of Canadian Agriculture Minister Lawrence McAuley in the idyllic province of Prince Edward Island. And between meetings, the two men are scheduled to pull up lobster traps and to walk the red earth of a potato farm, according to the day's agenda. Canada's protected dairy industry, likely to be a key issue for discussion after the president renewed his attack on the sector for its high tariffs, a supply management system that matches Canadian production to domestic consumption, sets prices, and imposes high tariffs to limit imports. Perdue struck a conciliatory note Friday morning. The United States, he said, is not about trying to get Canada to ditch its supply management system. But what we are saying is, if you're going to have a supply management system, you've got to manage the supply and not overproduce and not over quota, where you dump milk solids on the world market and depress prices from our producers south of the border. Canadian dairy have said U.S. overproduction is responsible for weak global prices. McAuley tweeted that he and Perdue understand how integrated the country's farm industries are. Negotiations on the North American Free Trade Agreement have been overshadowed by President Trump's imposition of steel and aluminum tariffs and Canada's vows of retaliation. With Trump and Trudeau out of step, the best hope for a breakthrough may come from Perdue and McCauley. They're both 71 years old. Although direct trade negotiations are still handled by the U.S. Trade Representative and Canada's Foreign Minister. But the rapport between McCauley, a former dairy farmer, and Perdue, the former Georgia governor, is comforting. That was the statement from Ron Bennett, president of the Canadian Federation of Agriculture. And he said, they might be the two people who can help find common ground. The U.S. and Canadian farm sectors are better off working together than apart, according to Kent Backus, director of international trade and market access for the U.S.-based National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And he went on to say that Minister McCauley and Secretary Perdue already have a strong relationship, and at times like this, you really need to lean on those types of relationships. Trade in farm products between the two countries amounts to $47 billion Canadian. That's $36 billion U.S., and it's annually split roughly evenly, according to Agriculture and Agri-Foods Canada. So how much more will come from that fishing trip than doing some pulling up of lobster traps? I guess we'll wait till next week to take a look. During June Dairy Month, this is the kind of a story you don't want to have to report, but it came out this past week that Republican Representative David Valadao of California confirmed that his family was no longer operating their dairy farm after the Los Angeles Times reported that a bank seized the farm because of unpaid loans. And the farm owes $8 million in loans that have not been paid. And like so many family dairy farms across the country, Valadao said burdensome government regulations made it impossible for the operation to remain open. And while this has been an especially difficult experience, I remain hopeful that sharing my story will help those going through similar situations. This is exactly why I ran for Congress, to give agriculture communities across the nation a strong voice in Washington. Agriculture lender Rabobank sued Valadao's Triple B Dairy Farm in November, and both sides agreed in March to hand control of the farm over to the bank until it is sold. Due to the debt from his family farm, Valadao, who is seeking a fourth term in Congress, has been repeatedly described as, quote, the poorest member of Congress. The ongoing battle between the biofuels industry and the oil industry continuing, and the U.S. EPA said today it will not reallocate exempt biofuel obligations under the Small Refinery Waiver Program without an act of Congress, and that means the war between big oil and corn will continue. As we look at the end of trade in the Board of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange today, the livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange saw the August hog contract down 12 cents, live cattle contract for June up $2.35, and the feeder cattle contract for August ended the day up $4.27 a hundredweight. But it was the grain market that took it on the chin again today, and particularly the soybean market that was hit pretty hard in a selling period that took the market down to the lowest level, I think, in about a year. So We'll wait now to go into the marketplace next week to see if the trade problems are going to continue to impact the markets in the way that they have for what seems like months right now, with particularly pressure on pork and pressure on soybeans in the world market. Well, that's our time. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us every week here as we talk markets, sponsored by the CME Group.